Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly. This is episode number 130. I'm your host, Vankman, and joining us today on the podcast, we have Mazer.
I'm very sleepy. It's not from drugs or from fighting some kind of monster. It's from helping people.
I mean,
but not in a heroic way. More like I'm your ride kind of way.
It's pretty widely known that the two major causes of tiredness in this country are
fighting monsters,
yeah,
or drugs.
Right.
I wanted to get those out there just because I was like, you know, people are gonna think it's either drugs or monsters.
Yep. Gotta clear.
Or the... monsters on drugs, and it was just because I gave someone a ride.
Early. Well, I fought a paper bag this week earlier.
What?
An evil paper bag. It won. It stabbed me in the eye.
Yeah, I heard you lost that fight.
I did. I definitely lost the fight. I was in the hospital with a mean old paper cut on my eye from a paper bag. Absolutely. See, this is retarded. Who gets a paper cut on their eye? I do. Good grief.
Now, I'm guessing people who know you might go, hey, did one of your daughters attack you with a bag or something? What happened?
I had my daughters with me. We were coming home from the store, and I'm trying to, like, carry two paper bags, one in each hand, you know? And I tripped, and, you know, I jerked the bag up into my face. And the corner of the bag caught me right in the freaking eye. And the doctor's like, yeah, the cut is right in the center of your pupil, which is why everything is blurry. And I'm like, well, that sucks. So I lost the fight. Now, I was thinking about this too. I know this really isn't geek related, but whatever. I was thinking about it, and I'm like, you know, had Ralph's not done away with their plastic bags, and I wasn't forced to buy a paper to pay 10 cents for a paper bag, this would have never have happened. Had I had a plastic bag, my eye would have never been cut. I'm blaming Ralph's. I'm blaming the store.
It's a class action, right? Yeah. Gotta find other people who've cut their eye on paper bags.
Start a Facebook group. I'm sure there's a bunch of you guys out there.
Yeah, right. I doubt it. Anyway, Ben P is also in the house. What's up, Ben?
How's it going? Man, I don't have any monster stories or bag fighting stories or anything like that. I'm kind of the lame one today on the podcast.
Just
it looks like
falling behind, man. You got to get into some action.
Yeah.
Get out. Find something to fight.
Yep. Some danger.
All right, well, let's move on to the box office numbers for this past weekend real quick. Chronicle, we'll talk about that later, brought in $22 million. It came in at number one, beating Woman in Black, which came in at a close second at 20.8. then we drop off to number three, The Gray, which brought in $9.3 million. Big Miracle brought in 7.7. I'm going to be honest right here. I look at the name Big Miracle, and that name does not sound familiar to me at all.
You don't know what it is?
It's the whale movie.
Oh, the whale movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they should put that in the, you know, the whale movie. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the whale movie. Okay, and then number five, Underworld Awakening. $5.5 million. So those are the movies that came out. None of us saw Big Miracle, obviously. But we did see Chronicle. I believe all of us did.
Yep.
You're probably going to want to get this on camera. Cha-ching, cha-ching, ain't a problem. Yeah, ba-bling, ba-bling, gonna leave the world. I don't want to do it. Dude, I don't want to do it.
Okay, are you ready?
Okay,
come on, do it.
Give me a countdown.
I will, okay? I promise. Ah!
Crap. Are we rolling? I'm going to get the gum. Pull it right out of his mouth.
What'd you guys think? Ben, why don't we start off with you? Your thoughts on the found footage superhero action film.
I'm one of the people that believes that Chronicle should not have been a found footage movie. I think the story is pretty interesting on its own without being wrapped in this gimmick of having to be seen through the lens of, you know, a kid who's constantly filming stuff. I mean, you've got this, basically by the end of the movie, the limitations of that format become distracting to the point where it just gets ridiculous. Like, there's a scene near the end of the movie, and this isn't a big spoiler or anything, because I'm sure you see some of this stuff in the trailers, but as these guys are flying around, there's a scene where, you know, they all have, like, telekinesis, and they're kind of imbued with these crazy powers at the beginning of the movie, and one of the kids, Andrew, the main one, generally throughout the movie, like, has this, his own personal video camera kind of floating around him at all times, like, filming what's going on. And that's basically the point of view that we see, that, you know, that we watch the whole movie from. And late in the movie, there's this big battle at the top of this skyscraper, and there's a bunch of people outside watching it, or inside, you know, looking through a window or something, filming with their camera phones and flip cams and all this stuff. And at one point during this battle, Andrew telekinetically calls all of these people's devices to him and just has them, like, spinning around him in a circle for the sole reason for the filmmakers to be able to edit it and make it look visually interesting instead of just being able, you know, just being locked into using one camera angle. So, you know, it doesn't really make any sense why he would have all of these cameras floating around him, except for a filmmaking standpoint. So, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff like that in this movie that just kind of bugged me. I think, you know, it has a good spirit behind it, but I just ended up not really caring for it that much. What'd you guys think?
I thought that, you know, the found footage, the way it was being shot, so I agree with you that the movie didn't need to be the found footage thing. It could have been a straight shot movie. They could have did it for just as much money. It probably wouldn't have cost any more money to shoot it, you know, as a normal film, story-wise. But all in the end, I enjoyed the movie. I liked what I saw. I liked kind of the story and what it was going for. And yeah, all around I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was just a fun, you know, popcorn flick that you could just kind of sit back and watch and enjoy. You know, it's, you know, so it's kind of one of those movies, but I liked it.
All right, Mazer.
Yeah, I think it actually, the found footage stuff works early in it. It gives you kind of an insight to the kids in a very particular way. But I feel like by the end of it, there's so much justification for all the stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they could have gone like a District 9 route where it feels a little bit like something that's being documented by the kids. But bit by bit, start to peel that away where it becomes an actual, you don't even know when it stopped being found footage and being a traditional film. I think that could have worked.
Man, yeah, it's a really good call. I didn't even think about that. That definitely, I mean, I much would have preferred seeing that version of this movie, but I forgot that's such a weird thing that District 9 does, and, you know, it kind of takes you by surprise, but yeah, good call.
And I also think that, I mean, I don't think they could have done this same film at the same cost if it wasn't this style. There's a lot of cost savings that's done through how they're doing it. I mean, all the quote locked off shots and things like that make it, the effects, way cheaper to do.
Mm-hmm.
than if you actually had something really more fully dynamic and stuff like that. I mean, clearly they put all the money at the end, so there's a bigger payoff. But I don't know. I enjoyed the film. I connected with the kids. I liked the story. Everything was really justified and everything was backed up. Everything that happened, nothing was really a surprise, but it was cool to see. And I feel like we haven't really had, I mean, this, like, I mean, the coolest part of all the superhero films is the power discovery part, and to see it be not one person discovering powers, but like these three kids discovering it with their buddies. Like, it's not something we've seen before, and it's something that will probably be, you know, we'll be seeing in a Fantastic Four film, but we haven't seen that in, you know, in an Iron Man or a Captain America or a Batman or something. Like it just doesn't happen. They're always by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this dynamic where it's, hey, look what I can do. Oh, look, I can do this better, or stuff like that. We haven't really seen that yet.
Yeah. The director, Max Landis, was actually rumored to be at the top of a list to take on the Fantastic Four reboot. It'd be interesting to see if that plays out. I know he gave an interview, and that was news to him. But just because it's news to him doesn't mean the studio is actually looking at possibly bringing him on to do
that. Wait, are you talking about Max Landis or Josh Trank? Josh Trank was the one who directed this. Max Landis wrote it.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Which guy was in talks for the Fantastic Four?
Josh.
Josh.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, my bad.
Well, they're going to have to do one really soon, otherwise the rights are going to go back to Marvel. So,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know of any other director who would be the right fit at this time.
Yeah, I mean, Mazur, bring up some good points about the movie is enjoyable for the first half of it for me. Like, until the gimmick of the found footage thing really becomes, like, inexplicable, it works. And I think there are a lot of great moments. I mean, there's a lot of flight stuff in here that's just fantastic to watch. You know, it does have this feeling of being, like, maybe a little bit cheap, but also the thrill that these guys are experiencing and their acting and stuff really makes you feel like you're right there with them. And that part totally worked for me. And, like, them messing around in the grocery store, you know, like, with the in the different, like, the toy store and the parking lot and stuff, like, all their, yeah, their little one-upping each other and everything, that all worked for me, too. It was just, as the movie goes on, you know, you get this kind of token girlfriend character introduced who happens to be a blogger who carries this camera around with her all the time, who says that she's filming everything for her blog, which makes no sense. Like, what is her blog? It's never mentioned. There's no there's no theme to her blog that's ever mentioned. She's filming, like, literally everything. So it's like, what is going on?
It's a blog about life.
Yeah, it's basically just the B camera for the movie. And, they needed something to cut to. So, but yeah, that's the great scene when they're at the talent show that I thought was really fantastic. And yeah, that
was cool.
Like, there's a lot of cool stuff that the story does. You know, I mean, telling it from the kind of quote-unquote villain's point of view seems like it would be a good idea because it's not really anything that we've seen in this type of movie before. But the kid, Andrew, like, he's just such a whiny character that I didn't care about his struggles. Like, I wanted him to fail because he was such a punk. Like, I mean, did you guys see Megamind? Was that last year, I think? The Will Ferrell animated one where he plays the villain? Did you guys?
Yeah, I've seen Megamind.
I thought that told this same type of story from the villainous perspective in a much more interesting way because you actually care about that character. And here it's like, okay, Andrew is like this kind of whiny emo kid and that's about it. Like, there's not really much to him. I don't know. That was just me, I guess.
I thought they did a decent job kind of showing why he kind of went bad. Like, of everything, just the kind of the way his life was and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, it kind of gave you it, you know, because even when we were in the movie theater, when he goes out and, you know, throws his dad across the room or whatever, I mean, there was clapping in the audience, you know, like, yeah, his dad deserves that for being a jackass, you know?
Yeah.
But, so I think it, people were able to kind of see why he was a whiny bitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. It seemed kind of, like, it seemed lazy in comparison with the rest of the stuff that this script does. Because, you know, it's got the super popular kid, Steve, right? Who is by far, for me, the best part of this movie, Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, that guy, he was amazing in Friday Night Lights. Amazingly a charismatic actor. He's going to do awesome stuff in the future.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, they've got this kind of stock character of, like, the really popular kid who's, you know, running for school president, you know, student council president or whatever. And then they do this really interesting thing where, because Andrew is such a loner, these three guys end up, you know, through this crazy sequence of events, getting these powers together, and it doesn't become like a class warfare type of thing. They really stick together, and, you know, in movies, most of the time, when you get the popular kid depicted on screen, he's a total jackass, he's wearing a football jersey the whole movie, and they, like, you know, pick on kids and stuff like that. And this movie doesn't do that. It kind of embraces the Andrew character through Steve, but then, and that's, like, kind of the point I'm trying to make is that, like, goes against the grain of what normal movies do, but then Andrew is, like, completely predictable in every way, and, like, just seems like, oh, this is just a standard kid, yeah, he's, you know, his dad drinks a lot, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, it just seemed like, oh, man, they were doing such interesting stuff, and then this normal thing happens, you know, it's just,
yeah.
Kind of seemed like a missed opportunity.
Stupid normality.
Yeah. I think it just kind of shows, like, you know, with these powers, it's not, I mean, with real power,
comes it great just, responsibility.
It just magnifies who you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Matthew character and Steve, they're actually pretty good guys. And then that comes out, and that gets, in a way, enhanced. And with Andrew, his otter tics and his problems with people, it starts to become a larger problem, where before it would have been him just kind of whining about something, and now he gets to do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I also thought that the climax was really ridiculous because there are, like, no consequences to it at all. Like, they're shattering through buildings and presumably killing possibly hundreds of people with all of the rubble and stuff that's just, you know, shattering off into the distance, and there's, like, cars being thrown around and explosions happening and all this stuff. And, like, I guess we should say this, I didn't really want to get into this, but let's do spoilers for this movie. So if you guys haven't seen Chronicle, stop or fast forward for a couple minutes. So the very end of the movie, and all these things are going on, and you've got like helicopter cameras from police and all these different like closed circuit things going on, and you see Matt, I think his name is, right? The kind of normal one of the bunch of the three. You see him very clearly, and the cops, you know, come up and draw their guns on him and everything, and then Andrew, of course, you know, like, shoots them all away Magneto style and just kind of blows them all back and stuff. And this happens over and over and over again. And the point I'm trying to make is that Matt is caught on camera from 100 different angles. And the end of the movie, like, post battle, it's just him in Tibet, like, with no consequence. You know, he hasn't had to answer for any of the damage that he caused in that, you know, in that massive fight. There's no, it's just like I just flew away and everything's fine. You know, like, I don't have to, there's no consequences for my actions here. And
well, he didn't do anything wrong, though. I'm sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Napier, a.k.a. Tiberius, joining us.
I'm sorry, I had to chime in because this is bothering me.
Okay.
I love this movie. Okay, all I gotta say is this movie is awesome. I love this movie. What is so good about this movie is that my wife actually loved the movie too. So, and she's not a sci-fi superhero fan at all. I mean, I had to beg and plead her to go see Thor, if that tells you anything. She loved this. What stands out about this movie, and I have to say it, Ben, why would he get any consequences? He didn't really do anything wrong. In fact, he deserves a medal. If Matt hadn't done what he did, who knows what could have happened?
Well, there's also not even negative consequences like, oh, you now owe the city millions of dollars, but just the thing of like, how about the government taking him and doing experiments on him, or, you know, like any of the kind of normal stuff that you would expect when society realizes that there are superpowered humans involved. I mean, that's what Watchmen does so well with the character of Dr. Manhattan. It's like, this is a real world, and then all of a sudden there's a guy who has like godlike powers. And I think that movie and comic book, obviously, that it was based on, handles society's dealing with that kind of brand new experience in a really interesting way. And this one is just kind of like, oh yeah, there are these guys and they can do crazy shit and all right, whatever. Like, nobody seems to really be that interested in what they can do or kind of repurposing their things for somebody's own use. I mean, I guess that could be like a whole nother movie in and of itself, but even hints at something like that would, because this movie, you know, insists, it demands that we take it as almost real because it uses this found footage style. You would think that there would be some kind of quote unquote reality to the way that people act in the movie. Does that make any sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know.
Did you like the fact when he's up there at the Space Needle, all of the like iPads, the camera phones, all of that were flying out, right? When Andrew smashed the window,
yeah,
and
that was...
all that stuff flew out. I thought that was pretty cool. And it shows how up to date with the technology, you know, with today's technology and stuff, the film is. And, you know, I mean, same thing with closed circuit TV and every, you know, shooting from all of a sudden you're shooting with the camera and then closed circuit TV. And I don't know, just everyone has a camera nowadays and this movie shows it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't know. That was one of the things that we talked about before you came on, where that was like one of my biggest complaints with the movie, actually, is that it seemed to me like they were just doing that so the filmmakers would have multiple angles to cut to during that big finale. And it just seemed like kind of this contrivance of like, oh, okay, we need things to do, so just have him pull people's cameras around. Like, I think the concept of people, of everybody having a camera, is not a new one, and it's not really explored in any sort of real thematic or deep way in this movie. Like, it's not breaking new ground or anything. Like,
no.
I mean, even Cloverfield did something like that. You know, as soon as you see the Statue of Liberty's head come flying down the street, everybody whips out their phone and is kind of like filming it or whatever. So it's been done even, you know, fairly recently too. So I don't know. I didn't see that as like any sort of cool thing. It was just kind of a negative thing in my mind, but you know.
I wouldn't say negative. I can understand negative, but for what it was for me, for what it's worth, I just liked it. I thought it was cool how they were all swirling around them out there. That's what I was getting at mainly. The fact that you see the iPad out there swirling around them. Different. You've never seen anything like that. We've never seen anything like that specifically. Yeah. That's what I was meaning.
Yeah, but what was distracting to me is there should have been a jump in quality from each camera to the next. And a lot of them, it looked like you were just kind of getting a filter as opposed to earlier in the film when there's this huge party, you had the older camera and you had the new camera, and the new camera, you're like, oh wow, this looks like pristine. And the other one's like, it's all like gritty and like the colors like the contrast is kind of blown out. Like there should have kind of been more of that when you're jumping from an iPad.
Yeah.
To,
if they're like, going to do that, do it right.
Yeah.
Well said, Ben. Well said.
I liked how Free and I were talking about this after the movie, and how I talked to him and said, you know, it kind of reminded me of the end of Akira. You know, it kind of had that same type of feel with the telekinetic powers and just chaos, and you know, you had the guy all bandaged up and you know, just kind of had that feel to it. But we were also talking about the flight battle, these two guys flying and fighting, and comparing that to kind of the conclusion of the Matrix, between Neo and Agent Smith, and how I think, you know, this fight scene, aerial flying fight scene, was a lot. I thought it was a lot more epic. It was much better done than it was done in the Matrix. I don't know. Just a thought that Free and I kind of talked about. What do you guys think?
Well, I agree with you on that. I mean, keep in mind, I mean, obviously, it's been years since the Matrix, so I thought it was, you know, that's obviously something we have to keep in mind, the change in technology and a bit of everything, but I thought it was better as well. I liked the gritty – I liked everything about this film in terms of the way it was shot.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm kind of like – you know, I think comparing it to the end of the Matrix is an apt comparison, because the whole thing about that was you've got Neo versus Agent Smith, and they're both like seemingly invincible. You know, there's not really anything that the other can really do to each other, as evidenced by, you know, 30 straight minutes of them punching each other in the face as hard as they can and smashing through buildings, flying around in the rain. The same type of thing goes with Chronicle, up until the point where Andrew gets impaled by this giant spike thing. It's like, you know, they're fighting for a good while and nobody seems to be gaining any real ground, you know? So it's like, what is the point other than just to look cool? So that would be as if, you know, if like Superman fought Bizarro Superman or something. Like, they're pretty much the same guy. And unless you like institute you know, a particular weakness, then it's not really going to be that interesting of a fight.
All right. Sounds good. I recommend, you know, if you haven't seen it yet, I recommend just to go check it out. It's a fun movie. I think you might like.
Yeah, it's a geeky movie, to be sure. You know, it's kind of
definitely
right in there with our audience. That's definite. Yeah.
Other than that, the other movie that came out was The Woman in Black. I have not seen the movie. I know Mazur hasn't seen it, and I know Ben hasn't seen it.
I have not seen it either.
Okay, so none of us have seen The Woman in Black. My uncle saw it and said it was good.
Yeah. What's funny is the manager at the movie theater that I frequent said that she had heard that the movie was bad. And I just think it's funny that see, this is, from what I've heard, The Woman in Black. Now, granted, this is all hearsay, so take it for what you will. But, you know, people have to understand, it seems to be more of a stylized horror film than many people would expect. I've heard that some of the jump scares are not what they expected and stuff like that. This is a truly classic Hammer horror film, though. It was made by Hammer, so, I mean, they're trying to really recapture that that essence of the 70s that they had done so well. That, I don't know. That's all I think about it. I've been wanting to see it. I are you guys interested in seeing this at all? Or?
I do. I really want to see it. So, all right, cool. Well, let's talk about some geek news then. How about Harrison Ford in talks and then not in talks to be in Blade Runner? It's like all of our hopes and dreams and goodness in the world that would make the world a better place was moving forward. Obviously, you know, Harrison Ford was going to be in this Blade Runner sequel spin-off type movie, and then now he's not.
I think it's good news, actually.
You do? Yep.
I agree.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because at the end of Blade Runner, it's a mystery. Is he human or not?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Ridley Scott has publicly said over and over, he is not human. And Harrison Ford has said he is human.
Mm-hmm.
So this sequel would pretty much go, which person is right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to know. That's the thing. I don't want to know. But
I do want to know. I don't know.
You have both people on the record. You can either pick Ridley or you can pick Harrison.
It doesn't count because they cancel each other out.
Yeah.
Where's the screenwriter? What does he have to say?
So the thing is, I don't want that to be answered, but I do want to return to that universe, and I do want to get back there with Ridley Scott, which is, you know, as far as I know, he's attached. So, yeah, I just, I'm excited. I just don't want it to be a sequel.
Yeah, I agree. I think answering that question is the worst thing that this new movie could do for the original Blade Runner, because that's why it stood the test of time so well, is that everybody always gets into this kind of philosophical argument and everything. I mean, there's been so many great arguments made for both sides, you know? It takes all the fun out of the ambiguity by answering the question. So I totally agree. I think, you know, the heads of Alcon Entertainment, is the production company that's, you know, financing and making this new Blade Runner spinoff, compared what Ridley Scott's going to do with it to what he's doing with Prometheus, kind of, you know, using that as a template. So it is going to return to that same kind of universe, and they want it to be a standalone story. And they also didn't outright say, listen, Harrison Ford is straight up not going to be in this movie. They just said, we're still in the story process right now. Casting is way off our minds. So it's possible that Harrison Ford could come back. I'm hoping if he does, it's in some sort of cameo role that keeps that ambiguity alive. Maybe something like a better executed version of what Schwarzenegger did in Terminator Salvation, you know, just like somebody who you're familiar with from that kind of universe making an appearance as just like fan service, basically, but only being in the movie for like a minute and then that's it, kind of letting it stand on its own, breathe its own life, you know, that kind of thing. But
yeah, Scott, we'll see. There's an interview that just popped up on Entertainment Weekly today. Scott kind of touches on this. He says, we're still in discussions about whether it should be a prequel or a sequel. And he's talking about Blade Runner. It's an interesting conversation. I'm meeting with writers and have also gone back to the original Blade Runner screenwriter, Hampton Fancher, and he still speaks the speak. He's right there. I spoke with him this week, but we don't even have a script yet. He goes, then they ask him, did you hear about the rumors of Harrison Ford? He goes, no, don't know yet, but you wouldn't rule that out. Absolutely not, but I'm not sure that that's going to be the story point, so I don't know. But if it were, nothing would please me more, honestly. A question, but it sounds like you don't even know yet if there would be a Rick Deckard character. No, I don't know. So yeah. Right now, all there is the concept of doing a Blade Runner film, nothing more than that. Yeah. Right. I just thought Prometheus was so enjoyable. Returning to the world of science fiction was so fun that I wanted to go back to Blade Runner 2. I'm also thinking about what the hell I might do for a Prometheus 2. Ah. So, there you go.
Interesting. All I hope is that he doesn't return to the Kingdom of Heaven universe.
What?
I don't think that needs to be done.
So, yeah, it should be interesting. See what goes on there.
Cool.
I mean, it'll eventually get done. So, just a matter of time. Let's see, what else? Let's talk about the new Amazing Spider-Man trailer. Did that not kick you in the ass or what? Did you like it, guys?
Yeah.
I know. I enjoyed the hell out of it, and I know Free did.
Ben. Yeah, I liked it too. I'm generally the voice of dissent around here, it seems like. But, I think, you know.
No way.
Because I didn't go to Comic-Con with you guys this year, and I didn't, or I guess it was last year, and I didn't see any of the footage or anything. The only footage I've seen from it is that first, like, little teaser trailer that was released, and I was just kind of like, really? Like, they keep hyping this as the untold story, and everything that I had seen so far looked like we had seen it before, or at least a variation of it, and not really anything too special. But this, the way that the action is filmed in The Amazing Spider-Man, looks really great, and I think this new trailer kind of captures that and really gives you a better sense of what the movie is going to be. I mean, obviously, it's a full trailer instead of just like a little teaser, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm more on board with it now than I was before. We'll put it that way. I still don't think it looks like quite as like awe-inspiring as like, oh, this is, you know, jump to the my most anticipated movie of the year list or anything like that. But it looks a lot better, and I think Andrew Garfield is going to be really great as Spider-Man.
All right. Tiberius, what do you think?
I think this is one of my higher anticipated films than I would have to say. Honestly, it's probably my third most anticipated film. First being Dark Knight Rises, second being The Avengers, and this. So I was excited about it from the beginning at Comic-Con this past year. The footage that we saw in the trailer, most of the action footage, was what we saw at Comic-Con. Am I wrong? I mean, there was maybe some other aspects, but am I right with that?
The effects were finished. There wasn't like huge areas of green screen. There wasn't exactly. All the set extensions were done. There was a lot more actual like action, because what we saw at Comic-Con was a lot of leaping.
Yeah,
it wasn't really much like him fighting people and stuff like that.
Well, all that aside, I was actually, honestly, I don't know. I know this might sound hokey, but I was sold when Garfield actually came up at Comic-Con dressed as Spider-Man, as cheesy as that is, and read that letter about how important this role is to him. You guys recall that?
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I mean, I don't know. That right there, that coupled with the fact that I trust, from what I've understood and what I've seen of Mark Webb, I think it's going to be a good. And then this solidified it. Don't get me wrong. The trailer solidified it. But I was already really excited about this movie because of that. I always like to see an actor or an actress or anybody or anyone that's passionate about what they're doing and wants to do it instead of just showing up for a paycheck. So
yeah, well, I was tracking. I've been tracking the comments on Facebook and things like that, and it's interesting to see how this trailer shifted the conversation. Before it was a lot of, oh, he looks like he's from Twilight. Oh, I feel like I've seen this movie before, and now it's like I don't like this. I'm looking forward to it. I don't like the costume, but I like it. You know, really? It's like yeah.
I love the costume.
Yeah, I do. Me too.
I like it as well.
I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, it looks like a wet basketball. I'm like, yeah, it's awesome.
Have you ever seen a wet basketball costume before? Yeah. No.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like people particular memory of what the Spider-Man suits looked like. And go and look at the suits again, like from the first three films. They look terrible now. That raised webbing looks bad, and I don't it looked cool at the time, but now compared to this design, it just feels like, oh wow, okay, that looks like, you know, the Batman suit with nipples compared to, you know, the new Dark Knight Batman suit where it's like a practical suit. You're just like, it's different, yeah, but it's better.
Yeah, and you've got the whole thing with Mark Webb kind of taking on, like, the Ultimates version of Spider-Man here. You know, like, it's not literally that, but it's heavily inspired by the comic, the Ultimate version. And it just, yeah, it feels like, you know, Raimi's version was more of, like, the classic type of look, and this is a lot more sleek and everything like that. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was great to see people's shift, because, like, the day before, early that day, we posted up a description and people were still on the fence. So, I mean, to see people just go, okay, I'm in. It was like, I didn't want to watch it, but now, and I think it's because the story elements are really different. It's really about Peter Parker, a scientist, trying to find out what happened to his parents.
And I only watched this trailer once, so you guys will probably know the answer to this question based on the trailer and based on what you saw at Comic-Con. Do they make it clear that Gwen Stacy, at some point in this movie, knows that Peter Parker is Spider-Man?
I think that's pretty strongly hinted, too.
Yeah, it's pretty much there. I mean, she says, oh, man, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Because her dad, obviously, is...
Yeah, they're kind of like butting heads, but
yeah.
But yeah, I think I mean, if that's true, which I think it is, I think that's really interesting. You know, they're kind of jumping the gun on that a little bit, and what the traditional layout of that kind of story would be. Like, normally it's not until the second movie that the love interest finds out, you know, the secret identity, but they're just like knocking it out, you know, getting it over with and moving on. And that actually, I think, will make for a little bit more interesting dynamic between them, instead of just she being like the doting girlfriend that's in love with one and not the other.
Yeah. And yeah, how, I mean, we saw Tobey Maguire pine for the Mary Jane character for like two films before they moved together. It was annoying. And also, like, you know, Mary Jane, she's just an actress, and you kind of had to like just figure out ways to plug her in. Yeah. But, you know, Gwen Stacy's a scientist. That's way more justifiable.
Yeah.
To get her involved, right? So
yeah, and her
I'm
dad,
a scientist.
And her dad is like a big part of the plot too. So, you know, you've got that as like a backup thing too.
Venkman's a mad scientist.
I'm a mad scientist.
Yeah.
Back off, man. I'm a scientist. All right. Anyway, why don't we talk about the Bourne Legacy trailer that was just released online about an hour ago?
I have not seen it yet, actually.
Oh, man.
Dude.
I love that trailer. I mean, that did a great job of getting me pumped up for this movie.
Yep.
I love the Saul Bass type. You know, if you've seen any of the old school 1960s Alfred Hitchcock movies, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about with the opening sequence of this trailer. It's just very stylistic and very, very cool.
Yeah.
Very excited for this movie.
Mazer, did you see the trailer?
I haven't. Oh,
okay, good. At least I'm not the only one, Mazer. That's good. Oh, God.
Yeah, to me, it looks like they're not even missing a beat with Paul Greengrass being gone. It's like Tony Gilroy, who was like a major part of writing all of them, if not like the sole screenwriter for all three of the movies, is now writing and directing The Bourne Legacy. And you've got Jeremy Renner instead of Matt Damon, and it just looks awesome. Like, it's a teaser. They're going to show a lot of the best stuff in there, you know, just to kind of get people pumped. That's the entire point of it. But
did we even see the best stuff, though? I don't even know.
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think they put the best stuff in it.
Well,
I think they put some good stuff.
Right.
The best stuff that works in 1 second.
Right.
There you go.
And they're still filming. They're still filming the movie, you know.
Yes.
So it's like it's not even done yet. So
yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean like big money shots or anything. I'm just talking about like, you know, they're gonna put it together in a way that is designed to get you excited for it. And I think even looking past like the kind of cynicism of like, oh, this is done, you know, on purpose, you know, of course it's going to look cool. It actually really legitimately does look cool, like stylistically, and the way the camera moves around, even in just the little snippets that we've seen, makes it seem like just a really like a common sense connection to the series that we've seen before, and also something that like bridges the gap to, you know, a bunch of new stuff that we haven't seen yet. So yeah, I think it looks really good.
Cool. You guys got to watch that if you haven't seen it yet.
I will.
You can catch that trailer on geektyrant.com.
Oh yeah, do it.
I don't know.
I feel like I
want
to go to other websites.
All right. It was also announced this week that Robert Rodriguez was moving forward with his sequel to Machete, Machete Kills, which is the second film in a trilogy. The third film will be titled Machete Kills Again. So Machete's going to be back, and I think they want to start shooting in April, I believe, is what they were shooting for.
Dude, I've got to step in here. The third movie, it's even better than that. It's supposed to be called Machete Kills Again, ... in space.
What?
Yes.
No.
Yes. Oh, yes.
What? Where did you hear that?
Dude, Vulture has a report about it. Here, I'll read from this. I know. Machete Kills, right? The plot synopsis is that Machete is recruited by the U.S. government for a mission which would be impossible for any mortal man. He must battle his way through Mexico to take down a madman, cartel leader, and eccentric billionaire arms dealer who has hatched a plan to spread war across the planet with a weapon in space. Machete takes on an army in an effort to dismantle a plan for global anarchy. So this seems like just a stepping stone into Machete Kills Again in Space, which Robert Rodriguez has said will feature a lightsaber machete, space babes, and no, he said it's going to be kind of like Moonwalker.
Effing way.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
So that one, it's like, I don't even care about Machete Kills. I just want to see Machete Kills Again in Space.
They should just skip to that.
Yeah.
Just skip the sequel and go straight to Machete Kills Again in Space.
Yeah.
I
that sounds absolutely ridiculous, but I have to see it.
See, that's the point. It's always, I mean, the first film was so over the top, and I think it's going to continue to be over the top. It's going to be finding a way to trump the net last film. Now, I don't know. I just hope that I don't know. Like, for example, Lindsay Lohan had her dressed in nuns and a nun outfit, and in the first one, and nude supposedly, which it wasn't her even, but. I don't know. The point being, there's always going to have to be one, and I wonder who they're going to get to make cameos with Robert De Niro actually starring in the first one and other people. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who is cast.
Yeah, in this. Danny Trejo has been in the business a long time, and he's made some good friends.
Definitely.
So I think he can call a lot of favors, even more than what we've seen in the first movie. So, yeah.
Definitely.
I agree.
Jeez, Machete Kills Again in Space.
Sounds awesome.
Yep. I'm down. I have one other thing, really quick. Just, we haven't talked about this yet, but let's touch on the Avengers trailer, the Super Bowl trailer that aired.
Oh,
wow. Because I was already excited for the film. They didn't need to show me that trailer. Like, good lord. The movie looks amazing.
Yeah, the extended spot is so much better, too.
That literally just. I don't even know what to say. I was, like I said, I was already excited. Like, uber excited for this movie. And that trailer just put it over the top. I mean. Joss Whedon, I mean, he was obviously the right choice to bring this movie to life.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And Mazer, you put together, like, what, 67 pictures, like, screenshots from the trailer?
I did.
Which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's like, we're getting it on the site, and at the exact time of, like, midnight, Disney sent out a much less compressed version of the trailer, so I took that and I took all these screen caps, like insanely huge, like high quality screen caps, and I was like, let's do it. But for me, the big thing was like not putting watermarks or anything like that.
Yeah,
so I hate when sites do that.
Yeah, I second that. Mazer, thank you very much for not doing that.
So yeah, it looks amazing. I think. I mean, goodness. For me, it's like neck to neck with The Dark Knight Rises. Like, it's still not beating it, but it's like it's getting pretty close.
Now, last year, I watched the whole Buffy the Vampire Slayer series again. And
oh, nice!
This year, I'm watching Angel, I'm on season 3 now. And there are some pretty badass characters and sequences in this show. And as I'm watching, I'm like, holy crap, Avengers is going to be mind blowing. Whedon was the man for this. I'm so glad Marvel got him on board.
Yeah.
I think he's the only. I honestly think he's probably one of the few people that could actually pull this off. Now, hopefully they don't screw him over in the end.
It'll be interesting. This is sad to say. This is, you guys know this already, but I have never watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, it's on instant Netflix.
I know. You're probably saying to yourself, Jim, what the hell is holding you back? And I have an answer for you. Nothing at all. It's time to do it, actually, is the key. So.
Yeah, time plays a big factor in everything.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, that trailer just got me really jacked up and excited for this movie. So if you haven't seen it yet, I'm sure you have, but if you haven't, check it out.
Best line, we've got the Hulk. Or we've got a Hulk, sorry. Oh, God.
Awesome. Okay, so coming out this week, you know, you have a few movies to choose from, like Safe House with Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds. It's one of those movies, you know, if you've seen the trailer, like, oh, yeah, Denzel Washington has been in this movie before. It looks okay. I don't know. I'm not sure if I don't think I'm going to rush out and see that one. No. Then there's Journey 2, The Mysterious Island. It's, you know, The Rock. I'm not going to go rush out and see this one either.
I really wish they would have taken the colon away, so it was like Journey, the number 2, The Mysterious Island. Like, as if you replace the number 2 with the letters T-O, but yeah.
They could have.
Yeah, they should have. The Vow, this is the Rachel McAdams, Channing Tatum movie that I'm also not going to go out and see this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Then there's Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, 3D re-release, which I'm not going to go rush out and see. So.
But you will see.
What?
You're going to see it.
When am I going to see?
Star Wars.
In 3D?
Aren't you?
Me?
Yeah.
I am?
Aren't you? Or no?
No, the other person in the room named Bankman. Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to see it, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I watched,
I am.
Look, I saw Star Wars Episode 1 on Blu-ray, and I couldn't even watch the whole movie. I had to fast forward to the fight scene at the end between... With Darth Maul and Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson. I could not sit through that movie. There's no way. I mean, after I watched that, I'm like, I'm going to skip the 3D version of this film because I can't even sit through the Blu-ray version.
The thing is, like, you know full well that Lucas has said, we're going to be tracking how well this does to see if we can do Episode 2, then Episode 3, then Episode 4. So if this doesn't do well, we're not going to get to the other 3D versions.
Well, you know,
I'm okay with that, personally.
Lucas should have just cut these first three out and did the first three first anyway. By starting with Episode 1, it's not going to help him. And if the other Star Wars fans can do it, fine. I'm a big Star Wars fan, but I just cannot sit through this movie again. I can't. I was grinding my teeth. I was like, how? I couldn't believe that Lucas had made that movie.
I will not actively give George Lucas any more money for the first three movies in that, you know, for episodes one,
really?
Episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Really? Oh. I actually will. Well, I won't. But in a way, I'm going to use my movie pass. But anyway, I think it's definitely something I want to see. I have a feeling I'm going to predict right now this is going to be the number one at the box office. If you guys disagree with me, I'm sorry, but I really think it will.
It might be Star Wars, and it's not going up against anything good. I mean, personally, yeah. I'm going to go see The Woman in Black. That's going to be my movie.
That sounds good.
Came out last week, but that's what I'm going to spend my money on this weekend.
Sounds
but
good.
I will not go spend. I can't. I mean, Jar Jar Binks, the whole underwater world.
Pod racing in 3D.
I don't even care.
The only thing I'm
remotely interested in is seeing the fight scene at the end, because that is the best part of the movie. That last fight sequence is the best part of The Phantom Menace.
Well, why don't you just time it and then show up like at the end?
I can just watch that on Blu-ray whenever I want now. I don't need to see it in 3D.
All right.
Man.
I'm a big fan of 3D, so.
I know you are. I know. I can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, I think that this, I don't know, this is one movie that should be seen in 3D. There's only few movies that really work in 3D. A lot of them are animated movies. Yeah, they're great, but since this has so much, you know, stuff, I really think it will work well.
You know what's going to be funny is I'll probably get bored over the weekend, and I'll probably call up Mazer, and I'll be like, hey, have you seen Star Wars Episode 1 yet?
And you guys will probably be in,
you know, I just realized, because we revealed this earlier in the podcast, will your eye be good enough to watch it in 3D?
Oh, no. That's
damn.
Right.
Oh, man. I don't know, guys. I can read the FedEx box at the corner of my room when I'm looking through my bad eye, but I don't know. We'll see.
How does it happen? I just don't.
How that happened. It was a long story.
I know, but I just have to say it again. Just, even though we don't have to explain it.
Here's the thing. I'm going to start a new reality TV series called When Paper Bags Attack.
There's so many people that's happened to. You're going to have an overflow of submissions.
So, all right. I have to thank my wife for that one. She came up with it. It was her idea. All right, guys. What do you got for me? Tell me, what do you guys? Plug your awesomeness.
Oh, yes.
I will. I have something to say first before we plug anything. It's a plug in a way to Geek Tyrant. I just wanted to personally say on this, if you guys are not watching the Geek Tyrant Daily Roundup, News Roundup, that our own Ben Pearson does, you are truly missing out. Now, I'm being serious. This is a good daily way to catch up on everything. You don't want to read. I don't have time to read. I don't have time to look at anything. But you know what? I want to hear Ben talk about everything that's going on. Well, I'll tell you what. You're in luck. We have it. Geek Tyrant TV. And Ben does a phenomenal job. So
thank you, sir.
Check that out. Daily. It's going to be on the daily newsletter if you get our newsletter, which you should be getting as well. Secondly, it's also going to be available at geektyrant.tv. Cannot miss that for the world. I'm telling you, subscribe, follow us on YouTube. Definitely a must.
Thanks for the plug, man.
No problem. No problem. I mean it. I'm genuine. Anyway, go ahead, though. I went ahead and talked.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I've also got the Not Just New Movies podcast, which now is graciously being hosted at Geek Tyrant due to ridiculous fiasco with Mevio, our former content, whatever, hosting service. But yeah, basically, we're having some iTunes troubles right now. If you're trying to subscribe to that in iTunes, I'm going to get it taken care of sometime in the next couple of weeks. So otherwise, just go to geektyrant.com, go to notjustnewmovies.com. If you want to get the older episodes, you can stream those from either one of those sites, and we'll have our iTunes scenario figured out in the meantime. The most recent episode we did, we talked about Steven Spielberg's Hook with Matt Patches. That's actually like one of my favorite episodes of the show that we've ever done. So definitely give that one a listen if you haven't heard.
Oh, that's great. I haven't put the podcast on Geek Tyrant lately. We had a couple weeks of downtime. But if you guys aren't listening to the podcast podcast, you can check it out on Geek Tyrant, but you can also check it out over at screeninvasion.com. Also, you can be sure, I'm just very happy to say I just broke the 1,200 followers on Twitter. And I know this is a shameless plug, but go ahead and follow me at Jim_Napier, and that would be wonderful. Thank you.
You're right. That was shameless.
I know. I don't care. And that's it.
Yeah. All right. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it, sir. Yes,
wow,
sir.
Wow. All right. Well, then don't forget, guys, to like us on Facebook at geektyrant.com/Facebook. Circle us on Google Plus, geektyrant.com/Google. Follow us on Twitter at geektyrant.com/Twitter.
Did you speak a different language?
I did.
Yes.
Speaking in tongues, I was the Holy Spirit. Geek Tyrant Daily newsletter. Subscribe to that. because we could always use more subscribers. And Tiberius helps us out with that and does a great job on that. So thank you. So yeah, subscribe to that and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Let us know what you think of our podcast. If there's anything, you know, we could do better, let us know. If we're doing okay, cool. Awesome. We won't complain. And then Geek Tyrant TV. Other than that, join us next week when I give a discussion on how to fight electricity.